Okay. אז אנחנו פה בדף י' עמוד ב'. Okay. The Gemara, in the wide lines, I would say about line 10, Om Rav Yossi Rav Chanina, Al Yamod Odom B'mokom Gavoa V'yispalel, Elo B'mokom Nomuch V'yispal, Shenemar Mimamakim Krasicha Hashem. So a person, when he davens, he should be in a low position, not putting himself b'makom gavah up on high. And the pasuk is in Tehillim, Mimamakim Krasicha Hashem. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learned the same in a brisa, and the brisa supports this statement of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Lo Yamad Adam Lo Gabi Kisev Lo Gabi Shrafraf, with some sort of a footstool, Velo B'Mokom Gavoa, he shouldn't stand up in a high place. Maybe that's the source for the shots to be Yored Lifnei Ateva, he goes down, and you'll see that in some shuls. Okay, he says, El B'Mokom Nomuch V'Yispalel Lefi She'ein Gavus Lifnei HaMokom. You know, in standing in the presence of Hashem, you don't have a right to build yourself up as if you're the big shot. Now here it's interesting, for some reason the Gemara feels compelled to bring a second pasuk, also in Tehillim, and this second pasuk is earlier in Tehillim, as a matter of fact. It says, Tfilo li'oni kiyatov, that tefillah is accepted when it comes derech hanov and shiflus, like an oni, like a poor person who doesn't stand on a high place, which would be a derech gaiva, but rather he feels like an ani, and he davens from a makom nomuch. And Rabbeinu Yonah here says that the Tana needed a second pasuk. Why? Because when you look at the pshuto shemikra of the first pasuk, mimamakim sounds like mimamake tsoros hanefesh. A person should feel that he's totally dependent upon Hashem. He's really, in a sense, down and out. But the second pasuk, even in its simple interpretation of ani, seems to indicate shiflus and anova. So that's the way Rabbeinu Yonah has it. He doesn't clarify why we needed the first pasuk. Why don't we just fast forward to the second pasuk? But I guess the second pasuk only tells me that my mental attitude should be that of an ani, who's totally dependent on his master or those who give him. So that's how I depend upon Hashem and tefillah. But it doesn't say anything about his physical body, and therefore, when we take the two psukim in conjunction, Rabbeinu Yonah says mimamakim, although mimamakim really refers to the straits of a person's soul, but we combine that with the fact that a person should feel that he's like an ani when he comes in front of Hashem. That's how we start the slichot with kidal dafakti v'lasecha. What does it say? Ke'aniu kidal dafakti v'lasecha. I think it's the opening line of slichot. You know, we ask Hashem, please open the door for us when an ani, you know, an ani comes knocking on the door. People don't want to open up the door. We're so dependent upon Hashem. The Meiri says that the reason why a person shouldn't pray on a high from a high place is because Nira, and Rav Kook is going to pick up on this, Nira Kemosha Rotze Lahakrivist Tfilosa L'Shamayim. When he stands high, like the Tower of Bavel, it seems like, you know, wow, I'm going all the way up and I'm giving Hashem my tefillah. V'yesh bezech yisar ne'amuna. Hashem is everywhere. You know, you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't hear from a distance, you have to climb up so that He'll hear you. And the Levush says, in Shulchan Aruch, the Levush wrote his commentary, or his codification of the halach, he writes that according to the Meiri, Osir gam b'mispalel yechidi. In other words, if he's showing that he's a bal gaiva, then that's really in a public demonstration. But if it's a matter of believing that Hashem can't hear from a distance, I got to whisper into God's ear by climbing up higher, that applies just as well in a yachid, in private, as it would in public. Now he quotes here in the Masifta an Ibn Yaakov, and this I don't understand. He says the following, that the Pasuk Tefillah Li'ani comes to add something. Shegam kishabal sapir shvacho shel makom tzorech lehomer b'makom nomach. Now, so I would have said that if I'm coming to petition to Hashem and ask for my bakasha, then I have to show myself as a humble person and pray from a makom nomach. But if on the other hand I'm davening, I'm not davening as a supplication, but rather I'm expressing praise to Hashem, then how do you know that even in that case he's got to be in a makom nomuch? And for that I need the second pasuk. Now the Ein Yaakov here doesn't seem to shed a light on what the second, how does the second pasuk teach me this? I guess he's saying that Mimamakim is talking about a person who's dependent upon Hashem, he's crying out to Hashem, and therefore that's called Bakasha, that's tefillah, that's supplication. Tefillah, on the other hand, is a word that encompasses everything. Even Shevach is considered part of tefillah. That's why the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah, says that there are three elements to tefillah: Shevach, Bakasha, and Hodoya. So we see that Shevach is an integral part of tefillah, and here in the second pasuk says tefillah li'ani kiyatov, and that word tefillah encompasses even Sheva. So even when a person is praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Ein Yaakov, he still should stand not b'makom gova but b'makom no. Once we're here in the Gemara, let's do the next piece of Gemara. They're going to be two essays of Rav Kook that we want to study today. One is on the piece that we just did now about Mimamakim, Makom Nomuch. And the other is about the posture of the feet when a person stands in tefillah. Omar Rab Yossi, Rab Chanina, Mishum, Rab Loz, Ben Yaakov, HaMispalel Tzorch Sheyechavin Es Raglov. He should be in a position which indicates that he's standing and not moving and not walking. His feet are together. When a person stands and he's not walking, his feet are together. It gives him more support. Shenemar, v'ragleim regel yishara. We learn this from Yechezkel, from the dmus of the Malach Yasharis. Yechezkel sees in his vision the Malachim, and they stand on one foot. So we should imitate the Malachim, and we too should stand on one foot. So it's very interesting because the pasuk starts viraglehem, which is lashon rabim, and ends regel yisharu with lashon yachid. So it seems that you have two reglayim, but they are connected one to the other, mechubaros and mechuvanos zu lezu, and therefore it looks like regel achas, and that's exactly what we have in the case of the Malach Yashos. We stand like the Malachim, and we put our 2 feet together. This indicates that we're totally dependent upon Hashem at the time of Tefillah. The Rashba explains, Lufisha Ragle Ha'odom Misayoslo, his feet more than any part of the body help him, Lahasig Esritzonosov. When he has a desire, an accomplishment, his feet take him there more than any other Eva. And they help him also to protect himself from Nezikin. Let's say there's a fire or some animals coming at him, he runs away. Kshaodim ispal tzorch likvo b'nafsho shekol hatzaloso v'asogas mivukosho eino ela b'yad Hashem. Beautiful language of the Rashba. You know, we're going back to the Rishonim here. The Rashba wrote a commentary on Agodas Hashas, and he says that by standing straight with the 2 feet together, man demonstrates in prayer that all of his protection and all of his ability to achieve his goals in this world is all b'yad Hashem. I mean, if we would take this message to heart, it could really bring joy to our lives. You know, to realize that we're surrounded by all sorts of dangers, whether it means crossing the street or driving a car, whether it means, you know, terrorist attacks, or God forbid, or whatever it might be, and we depend upon Hashem. But we have to know that Hashem is there to help us. So it's not our feet that run, it's our feet that are standing in one position, and that indicates that Hashem will, that's what the Shalosh says, that whenever you go somewhere, you're out on a journey to achieve a goal, you should always say, B'ezer Hashem. And when you achieve that goal, you get to your place, again you should say, V'ezer Hashem. To realize that everything that we achieve in our lives comes from Hashem. Is therefore, says the Rashba, B'esa tfila yechaber raglov zula zula haros kimosha raglov asuros. I would have written kvulos. He used the word asuros, mean that the feet of a person are tied together and he can't possibly move. V'enam yecholos lanua, he can't move out lagia el mevukasho ol hinotzel mehanezikin. And that's what it means when he puts his feet together and stands in davening. So on the one hand, he's like the Malachi Ashores, who are shluchei akel, that are totally dependent upon Hashem. He realizes that he can't go and achieve his goal. And at the same time, he realizes that Hashem is there to protect him, and he depends upon Hashem.
Is it fair to hear Eli Wiener from Sydney? And he was at my shiur, and I'd like him to come to yours. Is it something we should be able to find?
Yeah, we're learning Agada to okay. So he can certainly join us.
Okay. Eli is from Australia.
Very good. We like Australians. Yeah,
thank you.
Okay. I think Zev also did his time in that country too. So.
Okay, if you give him a thing, we shall be in touch.
Thank you very much.
No, not at all.
Okay, then?
Just come.
All right. So again, just to summarize what we're saying here in the Rashba, is that a person puts his feet together, he declares that any hatzlocha that he achieves, or any hatzola from all the mazikin, it's all b'yad Hashem, and that's the posture, b'shas tefillah, in which he declares, I am totally dependent upon Hashem, my feet are tied, I can't go anywhere, without you, Hashem, I can't run away from potential dangers without your Ezras Hashem. And therefore, when a person is davening, his physical posture should reflect the fact that he's thinking in his heart that Kavanas Hashem bebrias olam laso sholim pelosav shiyakir maase Hashem yidmel amalach Hashem. When a person davens, he should put his heart and mind on this intention that Hashem, when He created the world, He wanted man to achieve a shleimut, a perfection, and a recognition of Maaseh Hashem, of God. And in that sense, man is like a malach, v'raglayim regel yeshara, in that he focuses on declaring to himself that Hashem has created him in order that he should achieve perfection. And that's his goal, and that's his desire. Okay, having seen these two Gemaras, now let's take a look at the Ein Ayah, and this is on page 64. Just one second. No, we're not up to 64, my mistake. Somebody turned the page here. And we are on page 61. Kuf Nun Beis. He says that levad ha'ora pshuta. He says, in addition to the simple, straightforward interpretation of this statement in the Gemara, that a person should not climb high in order to get close to Hashem with a makom gavah, but rather he should experience shivron ruach geus adam. He should really break his gaiva, his sense of I am great. And that would make him a mental state of an ani, which is more appropriate for tefillah. He says, yesh b'zahar, there's another meaning that's indicated by the fact that halacha requires you to get off your high throne when you daven. And that is neged dimyon. He says, a person imagines in his mind, because he lives in a physical universe, haba mitzir kozir shel hagshama, that a person begins to think that he can come close to Hashem by climbing high. This is the Rashba. I would have written a footnote here to the Rashba. Sheyeda ha'adam she'ein chiluk b'kavas l'kim b'enim yeh b'mromei shamayim v'tachta. So it makes no difference, and the Rambam points out the Mor Vuchim, whether he climbs all the way up high to try to reach shamayim, or he stays down on the earth. Where is God? God is everywhere.
We have another copy of
the I don't know. How many copies did you make?
Oh no, I made just one, because we have another book.
another book. I don't think we have another book. Just 61, I think, will do for the time being. Maybe you want to do 62 as well. And then we'll... So just to give you a little background of what we're discussing here, the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yossi that a person, when he davens, he shouldn't be sitting on a very high place. The pasuk says, "Mi ma'amakim krasi Hashem," that David HaMelech says in his prayers that I go down to the lower depths. And the reason for this is because if a person climbs up high, he in a sense boosts himself up as if to say, "I'm great." That's what we call gaiva. And that is antithetical to tefillah. Prayer requires a person to feel a sense of humility. Now, what we're studying is the inside of Rav Kook. Rav Kook says that there's another reason why the halacha objects to a person climbing up to a high place when he davens. He says that people use their imagination because they live in a physical material universe, and they think that just like if I want to talk to you and you're upstairs, I got to climb upstairs, otherwise you can't hear me from a distance, so too God is up in the himmels and he can't hear me. You know, as if to say God is hard of hearing. He says, Ikar kirva salukim to the Iraq. How does a person get close to God? It has nothing to do with whether he climbs up high or he's down in a low place. But rather, hakarato v'yediato. He has to recognize and know that God is there and God is listening and hearkening to his prayers. Im kinyana ma'alot ha-tovot. And that's the way he can acquire the great attributes Shehim Darchei Hashem Yizbarach that will lead him on the right path and the right journey to find Hashem. Od yesh makom gavoh makom namuch gam v'rikshot ha-nefesh v'mut ha-dat. He says that this idea of a high place and a low place is also symbolic of the human emotional system. Sometimes we are very intense and we're elated, we're on high, we're feeling groovy. And other times we go down, down, down into the lower parts. He says, "Lifamim adam margish noam Hashem." Sometimes man feels God is close to him. There's an intimacy. God is whispering or touching him. Umitgaberet olav rikshot hod kvod elyon. And then he becomes intensified with the feelings of the majesty of God, the holy God, on the highest supreme level. And then he combines that with yidiato b'romutok v'yasagato, with his own level of intellectual comprehension and appreciation of God. Ad she'eino chafetz b'shum inyan ki'im liyot mit'aneg el Hashem. He says in such a situation, he doesn't feel anything about his needs in life, you know, the fact that he hasn't paid his bills on time, his salary wasn't paid on time, or any other pressures. He said in a moment of romimut, of this lofty sense, he doesn't feel anything about the dvarim hama'ikim, those things that really pressure us. He really is he's on a journey to shleimut, to perfection. He says, "Lo hargashat haromimut levadam aspektiv l'shleimut." But man was created as a being that somehow has these, sometimes has these highs, but other times he's down low. And in order to achieve shleimut, he has to be able to deal with both situations. Shnei matzev ha'eruachim. He tzarich la'asig gam ken tzeim kulam l'gadel romim shleimut ha'pratit ha'kalit. He has to deal with situations in which he feels difficulty in life, adversity, challenges, and he has to find the methods in which he can come higher and higher and climb. And therefore, l'tzorach tefillah yamod b'makom namuch b'rikshotav. When a person comes to daven in front of Hashem, he should induce himself into that attitude of, you know, I'm down here, I got my problems, I got my issues, achi agish tachaser, I feel my deficiencies. And should pour out his heart to God, that God should help him. Okay. Let's stop here and fast forward to Kuf Nun Gimel, which is the piece on the left column of your page. The Gemara says again in the name of Rabbi Yossi that when a person prays, his feet should be together. And this is derived from Viragleim Regal Yeshara, because the Malachi Asharis, the way Yechezkel perceives them in his vision, have one foot, their 2 feet are together. Rav Kook asks, why is there such great significance and importance attributed to the feet and the position one's feet are in when he davens? He says, Raglayim Mishamshot Pulat Alicha Upulat Amida. Feet will serve two functions. Number one, you can walk, and number two, you can stand. He says, as far as the first is concerned, when you're walking, then the feet are separate one from the other. However, when you're standing in one place, generally speaking, he says, we put the 2 feet together. And Rav Kook says that this symbolizes two dimensions of the human aspiration and the responsibility of man to serve God. He says, when man uses halicha, and he's walking, he's moving, he's on the move, as we would say, that symbolizes man at a certain stage in his development spiritually. He's trying to climb the ladder. And that means he's trying to acquire both intellectual perceptions of God, he's trying to fine-tune his soul and his attributes. But then there's Amida. Because it's not enough for man to be constantly, continuously in a state of halicha. At some point, man has to allow his achievements to penetrate into his heart and his soul. He's got to find a way of protecting and preserving that which he has acquired. And that is symbolized by Amida. Amida means standing in one place, hadvarim shekana yiu kinyonam chazak benafsha. That which he acquired should be strong. He should have a strong grasp over it. V'lo yafsidem, and if things change, situations fluctuate, he should not lose that which he's gained. That's why David HaMelech says, and this is a very famous piece in Tehillim, which we recite over and over again during the high holidays, and that is, Mi alev Hashem. There are those who climb, but that's not enough. The ultimate achievement is Mi Yakum Bimkom Kacho. He's asked to maintain the position that he has and not fall behind. She Sha'er B'malato, and he should have an absolute acquisition of that which he has achieved on this high level without having to the fluctuations of time, in a sense, bring him down and rob him of what he's acquired. He has to have an absolute possession. It's like, for example, if you make some money and you keep it in cash, it's very easy for the cash to get lost. You put it in a bank, you put it in a safe deposit, and it's locked up, it's preserved, it's guarded. He says that's what Amida means. Amida means guarding. HaTorah miyuchedeti lo sif shleimut umala. On the one hand, one dimension of Torah observance is to allow man through the mitzvot to achieve and to move and to acquire more and more possessions. That's called derech. That means man is on his journey. As the Mishnah tells us in Avos, Man delo Yosef, he who doesn't add from one day to the other, he's going to fall. However, there's another element here, and that is the Amida element. And he says the following. Within the context, the constellation of man serving Hashem, there are two dimensions. There's mitzvot, in which man is moving, he's doing, he's active, and then there's tefillah. What is prayer? Hatfilah marshemet et hamalot haknuyot shiyu kvuot v'kayomot. The power of tefillah is to take all those malos, those great levels that he's achieved, that he's acquired, and transform them into kvuos v'kaimos, that they're absolutely steadfast and nothing will undermine them and blow them away. That's what tefillah is all about. And that's going to explain why tefillah requires that you put your feet together, because that represents the amida, the standing of a person. Ubazeh ha'odam is damak v'yecholto l'sichlem elyonim. That's how man imitates the angels on high. The level of spirituality in the case of a malach, of an angel of God, is very strong. It doesn't waver. It is not affected by fluctuations in time. We have to imitate the malachim. Why is it that the malachim are always in a stationary position. And the answer to that is because that's what a malach is created for. A malach doesn't have to strive, doesn't have to have aspirations to grow and get greater and greater and climb and ascend the mountain. That's for man. Man is a mahalach. Man is on the move. But the case of a malach is that he was created by God with a certain level of perfection. He doesn't increase that level. It doesn't go up. It doesn't go down. He has a very strong hold on that niche that he has achieved. And therefore, when it comes to the legs of a malach, l'koach ha'achdut shebahem, regel yishar, they have one united, you know, the two legs are united to form one leg. Umore, and that reflects the fact, al mamativi lo bechiri, that they've achieved a certain natural level. It's not a matter of freedom of choice. We don't believe that the angels have freedom of choice. Kinyana tnua tiv'it she'ein bo akum v'lo ivut. When it comes to nature, a line is straight. It's not crooked. And therefore, gamkein nichlalot ishtadlut adam b'tfilah she'tiel ma'alotov knuyot etzlo u'mutba'ot. The achievement of tefillah, the power of prayer, is to take all that we have accomplished and make it natural. Let it penetrate into our very being. And this touches on something that we saw the other day in Rav Kook when he spoke about the two categories of sanctity. Because if you recall, there was the sanctity of Elisha at one level where there was no fly on his table. And then there was the sanctity of Elisha. Correct, and he didn't have carry at night. And Rav Kook said those are two levels of Kedusha. At one level, you're striving, you're battling, you're confronting, there's constantly challenges. And at the other level, it becomes teva, it becomes natural. And therefore, even when you go to sleep at night and you don't have the active intellect that's operating, still you have a natural propensity towards good, and therefore Elisha doesn't see carry at night. Here also, I think what Rav Kook is saying is that the situation of Halicha symbolizes man in his challenges, in his moving. He's constantly trying to climb Mount Everest. Or, I don't know, what is the tallest mountain in Australia? Okay, fine. That's the name of a bridge in Brooklyn. But anyway, so that's the Halicha element. But then there's the Amida element. That's what the Malachim represent. The Amida means when it becomes natural to you. When you've allowed these accomplishments to penetrate. You know, you could have, for example, a person who at certain times of his life, he achieves a sense of modesty, a level of humility, but then situations change. He becomes very wealthy, very successful, people around him look up to him, and all of a sudden, he feels a sense of he boosts himself up. He hasn't yet made that last accomplishment to tie it together, to fix it in stone, as we'd say. And that means Amida, to take the Halicha and make it into Amida. What aspect, says Rav Kook, of our service to Hashem facilitates that achievement of Amida? When do we have the propensity and the ability to take an achievement and make it into something that's real, that's natural, that seeps into our nefesh? That's the power of prayer. The mystical power, the mysterious power of prayer, is that when I stand in front of Hashem, and that intimacy with God allows me to let the achievements that I've managed to achieve seep into my soul and become very much a part of it.
Reflection.
Correct. There's a moment of movement, I'm on the move, and then there's a moment of reflection where I take it all in and I focus on my midos. This is the ethical element of tefillah that Rav Kook constantly emphasizes. We think of tefillah only in terms of pragmatic, God, give me what I need. And Rav Kook's philosophy is that's anything but what tefillah is all about. Tefillah is about building the nefesh. And in this particular approach, it's about the Amida in which we achieve our ability to maintain that which is hopefully ours for life.
It's not really for us.
It's for us, correct. It's for us to change, to transform ourselves, and to really make ourselves into the highest level of human beings that we possibly can.
Had a question earlier case regarding why what to Sukkim. And I think Rav Kook explains it because
he said, oh, he does? Well, I didn't see that.
Because he said Shvelut and the opposite side of that is Romanut. And that would be like Ke'ani. And on the other side, on the other dimension, he talks about Omek, Mimamachim, as opposed to Shvelut.
And this is in Kufnun Bet?
Yeah, in Kufnun Bet in the bottom.
Yeah, I didn't call that far, because once he got into this Marna Vukum in the Rambam,
he just at the very bottom line, second line at the bottom, he says, Shnei Inyanim Bet Siwan. So he's actually saying that's why he brought the two Pesukim. One is Ala Shvelut HaMatzav B'Negud LaRomimut. That's the one aspect. V'Ala Omek HaDa'at B'Negud LeShitchiyut V'Havana. And the other one, Ma'am HaMukim HaMatzav B'Negudish. So one is Romimut as opposed to Shiflut as opposed to Romimut.
That's me, Ma'am Akin.
That's for Ke'ani.
Oh, really?
He switches them around.
Oh, he switches the order, the sequence.
Yeah, and the other one is Ma'amakim, Omek, as opposed to Shafiut, which is a completely separate dimension. I mean, the two don't necessarily meet, and that's why maybe you needed the two Psukim.
You differentiate between Shvelut and Shafiut.
Yes, Shvelut is modesty, but Ma'amakim is to reach the very deep point within the person, as opposed to something which is just very superficial.
Okay. Now we have another piece in the Gemara that we want to study, and that is that a person should not eat before he prays in the morning. Om Rav Yosef Chanina, my dechtiv lo tochlu al adam, lo tochlu kodesh shetitpalu al dimchem. We're not allowed to eat before tefillah. And if you look at Kuf Nun Dalet, he writes the following. He says, "Hargashot harishonot polot ba'adam atchalat kol yom." When a person wakes up in the morning, his initial feelings and emotions will have an impact on him that will project him through the day. So it's very important, you know, to catch those very sensitive and significant moments after you wake up. L'chaven al p'em, based on these hargashot, we're able to direct our purpose, our behavior, and our life. And therefore, a person, when he wakes up, the first thing that he should be interested in are those regashot na'alot, those lofty feelings of spirituality in which man gears himself towards the purpose and the goal of achieving shleimut. And that's something that he can acquire through tefillah. Tefillah, more than any other experience of man, evolves from the depths of the feelings of his soul. And that's what it means, ki adam hu nefesh. Begin with the life of the nefesh. V'lo yochal tchila. But don't start your day by eating. Why? Because then he is actually living in the world of any animal. A man is also an animal. He's a member of the animal kingdom. He needs food. But in a sense, all the feelings that are connected with eating really are not connected to the nefesh that makes man a unique creature, but really is common to all the animals. Biotam kodmim l'rikshei kodesh, if he starts with the feelings of how much he enjoys his food, and he puts that in a sense sequentially before the feelings of kodesh, yifalu olav, they will have the greatest impact. And then as a result, his halicha during the day, his focus and his goals, his objectives, will be to shiflus, will be to something that on the higher archy. Not, I don't think Rav Kook is trying to de-emphasize the significance of eating. obviously every physical act has to be elevated, but the question is which feeling should man start his day with? And if his feelings are directed towards his physical satiation, then that's going to lead to a sense of shiftless erkam rather than the highest levels of the nefesh. Very interesting addition to this Gemara. Well, the next piece we've done already in the past, so we can skip that. And now we go down to the bottom of Yud Amud Bet in the Gemara. Amar Rav Mani, Gadol HaKorei Kriyat Shema Bo'Nasa Yoser Me'a Osek B'Torah. Who's greater, a person who recites Kriyat Shema in its proper time, or a person who learns Torah? And according to Rav Mani, the Korei Kriyat Shema is even greater. And he's medayik it from our Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, HaKorei Mikan V'Elich Lo Hifsid. If he reads Kriyat Shema after the time has passed, meaning let's say Kriyat Shema is only up to the third hour, if he reads Kriyat Shema after that time, Lo Hifsid, it's not meaningless. What does he gain? Ka'adam HaKorei BaTorah. Okay, he gets at least the kiyum of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because the three parashiyos of Kriyat Shema are Torah. Michlal, we see that Kori Bo Nasa Adif. Had he read Kriyat Shema in its time, that would be even supersede and be greater than Talmud Torah. So when he reads Kriyat Shema Bo Nasa, he gets the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. When he recites Kriyat Shema after its time period, then he gets the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And the mitzvah of reading Kriyat Shema is greater than the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Now I have a note over here in the name of the Pnei Yoshua that the reason why Kriyat Shema is greater than Talmud Torah is because Kriyat Shema has what element to it? Exactly, Kabbalat Ol Malchus Shamayim. So that's the Pnei Yoshua. Now there's a Tosfos here that starts with the word Gadol. If you take a look at the Tosfos, and basically what we want to get from this Tosfos is the following, that what the Gemara means is Adifa, when it says that HaKorei Kriyat Shema Bonasa is Gadol, he says Adifa al Stam Korei B'Torah Shelo B'Shas Kriyat Shema. If he reads the Torah and it's not the time for Kriyat Shema, then that's on a lower level than reading the Torah at the time for Kriyat Shema. Ach ein lefarish hakavona shemafsik talmudo lekriyat shema bonasa. We're not talking about the question as to whether or not he should be mafsik his Torah for the sake. Let's say he's involved in Torah study. Should he therefore interrupt his Torah study for the sake of Kriyat Shema? That he says is pshita, because a person has to interrupt his Torah study for any mitzvah. And why should the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema be inferior to any mitzvah? So that's not what he means. The Gemara is not trying to tell us that, hey, you know, you've got to interrupt your learning for the sake of the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. That was pshita, that's a universal rule, and that's not a chidush. The chidush here is that if you were to compare two people, one person is reading Kriyat Shema after the Onah, and he's getting the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the other person is achieving the mitzvah of Kabbal Salmach Shmayim, it's the second person who's greater than the first.
Do I get that correct, that you interrupt your Talmud Torah for a mitzvah?
That is correct. There are a few exceptions, but as a general rule, yeah, we don't apply Osek B'mitzvah Potem in a mitzvah to the case of Talmud Torah, because Gadol Osi Yoseh Gadol HaMasa Yosem in a Talmud, which means that the purpose Gadol HaTalmud HaBev L'Dei Maisa is for action. So therefore we interrupt our studies for the sake of any mitzvah, including Kriyat Shema. It, you know, on Mondays and Wednesdays, I give a shir be'iyun. You know, we learn the halacha parts. So yesterday, we were discussing what's called Kriyat Shema de Rebbe. That's a sugya later on in Daf Yud Gimel in the second parak. And Rebbe was busy teaching Torah, and he interrupted only to recite the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema. Shema Yisrael, Shem Lekenu, Shem Echad. So at the end of the shir, you know, after a whole discussion, we came to the conclusion that the sheet of Rebbe is like the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that the kavana that you require for Kriyat Shema of Kabbalah Salmach Shemayim is in the first pasuk alone. The balance of reciting Kriyat Shema beyond the first pasuk, all the three parashios, although that could very well be a Torah requirement, but it's not Kabbalah Salmach Shemayim, it's Kriya. So when it came to Torah and Kriya, Rebbe felt that he didn't have to interrupt, because if he's reading the parashas of Kriyat Shema, that's not inferior or superior to Torah itself. If he's teaching Torah, he doesn't have to stop for a different Torah. That's called Hai Shinun V'Hai Shinun. They're both Talmud Torah. But when there's a unique mitzvah of Kabbalah Salmach Shemayim, that trumps Talmud Torah. And even though he was teaching Torah for the sake of Kabbalah Salmach Shemayim, which is inherent in the first pasuk, he has to stop. He has to interrupt his learning.
So he would actually let the time pass. He's in the middle of it.
Correct. Sure. Correct. He would let the time pass, because the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema is not superior to the mitzvah of Kriyat Satorah, you know, reading the Torah, of teaching the Torah.
So you fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema with the first, Shema Yisrael.
Correct. It. And for that he had to stop. And for the rest, he didn't have to recite it.
And that's for us as well? We
no, I don't think we paskin like Rebbe, because Rebbe is on a very, very high level. You know, his teaching Torah was very unique. Now, Rav Kook is very famous in all his writings, and we discussed it the other day, Zev, for seeing the individual as part of the greater whole, as part of the community. And this statement in the Gemara that puts Kori Kriyat Shema on a higher level than Talmud Torah, which Lechora has nothing to do with the Yachid versus the Tzibur, Rav Kook sees in it, you know, his particularly unique Hashkafa. And he says the following: on one level, we can judge the perfection of man in his striving for Shleimut. Lufi Eriko and Madrigoso, let's take a look at how he's doing on his own as an individual. He says, but that's not really what the Shleimut is all about. Perfection is not man as an individual alone, but rather Shleimutam Shal Yisrael. There is an entity called Goy Echad Baretz. We are one indivisible body. And therefore, he says, when we gather together all of the Jewish people, each one has his ability, some are greater, some are lower. He says, Lemerkaz Echad, we find, it's like a hub of a wheel, we find that hub, that center. And that center is going to be not necessarily a physical location on the face of the earth, but it's going to be a moment in time. And that moment in time is going to gather together all of the people of Israel. And we have to ask ourselves, what is that moment in time? He says, an individual, Rak Bazeit Kadesh Shem Hashem, in order for man to reach perfection, he's got to link himself up to the entire community. He calls it Bekibutz V'Achtus Klal Yisrael, one entity of Klal Yisrael. And this is especially appropriate for this time of the year, you know, Erev Tisha B'Av. Ushleimuto Shal Yachid, if we were to gauge and evaluate the perfection of the individual as it relates to he himself, in other words, his own striving on a very personal, private level, he says that's not even, that doesn't even register. It's Eina Cheshuva Klum, it's like nothing in comparison, in contrast, to the evaluation of this individual when he integrates himself into all of the nation of Israel for what he calls Shleimut Klalit, the total perfection. So that even though when a person studies Torah, he certainly achieves great things in terms of his own level, and if we evaluate him vis-a-vis himself as an individual, we certainly see how much Torah has impacted on him to create this spiritually lofty person. However, if only his Talmud Torah could be connected to the entire community, then it would have you can multiply it geometrically, not arithmetically, the amount of uplifting impact it would have on him. Hine Talmud Torah hu b'makom shebo kona kol yomim ishtap muso l'fiercho. Talmud Torah is that location, is that point in which man achieves the greatest perfection according to his own individual evaluation. But what we're looking for is one place which is the hub, the center, that gathers together the Talmud Torah, the study of Torah of all of Klal Yisrael. And that is the concentrated level of Torah study which unites the entire nation of Israel. Where is that? Or when is that? That's the moment of Kriyat Shema. When Kriyat Shema is read in its time, it is not simply the study of Torah or the recitation of Torah, but rather it's the ingathering and the uniting, the unification of the entire nation of Israel into one entity. The entire nation of Israel lifts its eyes and its soul to the source of all life, and there's only one such source with a capital S, and they do it all ba'ona achas. Ona achas doesn't mean one split second, it means in one period of time, one time unit, which is the time unit for Kriyat Shema, when we all declare that Hashem Echad, He is the source of life. And that experience of linking into the Tzibur by reciting Kriyat Shema Bo'nasa, mechazeket ma'od et ha-kesher ha-klali, it, number one, ties the individual to the community, and number two, it ties the unity of the entire community together. He says, ha-havana yotzeit v'nimshechet mi'idiyat ha-achdut v'kabalat ol machshvayim mitchaleket lepratim. And when there's this massive, awesome body of the nation of Israel accepting Hashem's kingship and His sovereign rulership, now, in a sense, it subdivides into the individuals. And every person, according to the level that he's able to, will receive some of this hamshacha, of this connection, coming from above. And therefore, the Kori Kriyat Shema Bo'nasa is greater than the Osek B'Torah. Because the Osek B'Torah means he's involved in his own personal study of Torah, his own aspiration to ascend the mountain and achieve Shleimut, but he's not linked up to the Tzibur. Because when he studies privately, that doesn't connect to all Klal Yisrael. But when he places himself into, he jumps into Klal Yisrael, then the value of his Torah study is immensely, exponentially greater than the value of his Torah when he studies it as an individual. How can I recite Torah in such a way that it links me up to this powerful energy force called the community? That's by reading Kriyat Shema Bo'nasa. So Rav Kook's universal philosophy all over about man and his greatness insofar as he connects to and unifies himself with the Tzibur, Rav Kook finds it here in this Gemara. I would have learned this Gemara for a million years and never even dreamt that it has anything in the world to do with the Yachid and the Tzibur. And now, my friends, we're going to fast forward to the Agavita on Daf Yud Alf. The rest of the parts that we're skipping, we've covered already in the Halacha Shir, and now we're on a statement of Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda on Daf Yud Alf. It's smack in the middle of the page. Ovel Chayev b'chol mitzvah samuris b'Torah chutz min atfilin. You know that an Ovel on the first day of his Avelus, the day in which he buried one of his close relatives, does not wear tefillin. And the reason for that is Sharei Nemar Bahen Pe'er. Pe'er means splendor. Tefillin is called the splendor of a person. And the Avel is excluded from tefillin. This is relevant even for Tisha B'Av, which we'll commemorate on Sunday, on the 10th of Av this year, because of Shabbos. And there are those, the Rush quotes in the fourth parak of Tainis, poskim, who say that we don't wear tefillin on Tisha B'Av, because we are all avelim. The whole day. I don't know of any community that's adopted that opinion, because both Ashkenazim and Sfaradim will wear tefillin in the afternoon. But the Rush quotes the Maram, who is of the opinion that we don't wear tefillin at all on Tisha B'Av. And the reason is because Tisha B'Av is like the first day of avelim.
The question is, or maybe the point of view is, what I was thinking was the fact that after Chatzot Hayom is we're Meikel,
right,
is not necessarily because it's hard for us to continue, but maybe there's a symbol of this is going to be a moed. I mean, this is
it's going to be
a moed.
Oh, a moed.
It's also. I think we saw.
But that halacha that Tisha B'Av is going to be a moed, I think applies even during the morning hours, because we leave out tachnun,
yes,
we don't say avinu malkeinu, we don't have vidui.
Yes,
all these we don't say slichot even because kirolai moed.
Because we see even though.
But you're right. No, the second half of Tisha B'Av is different from chatzot and on.
It's
the nature of the day changed. It's no longer the first day of Avilus. It's now the second day of Avilus. So we wear tefillin.
Maybe even intention is different. Not by the fact that now the time has passed, we're less availing. But the Tisha B'Av is actually the start of a new beginning. That was what we saw in Rabbi Akiva. And he said,
one with the fox at the end of Marcus.
Yes. So he said, this is the start of the new beginning. That means it's got two sides. Sorry for the destruction, but we know that this is a new beginning. And that's why I think we do put the tefillin on. It's not because maybe.
Right. And that's going to fit very well into this presentation, Rav Kook, which is number Kuf Nun Zion on page 62. Now let me give a little bit of an introduction, Lufiani Zdaiti, to this presentation. This paragraph is all about man's impact on his fellow man. Obviously we want to have a positive impact and influence on others. And for example, the Mishnah says that simcha means misameach et abriot, you know, to bring simcha, to bring joy to others. If you yourself are in a state of etzev, ayin tzadi bet, which means you're in despair, you can't really bring simcha to others. But yet Rav Kook is of the opinion that when a person, an individual, experiences not simcha but the opposite, he goes through etzev, that's also a very ennobling and critical moment for his spiritual development. Man is meant to strive for shleimut, to sensitize his soul, not only through experiences of simcha, but also through experience of etzev. And Rachmana Litzlan, when a person undergoes avelus, the experience of avelus, that etzev of avelus is also meant to fine-tune his personality. But that's only on an individual level. When it comes to what kind of impact I can have on others, for that Rav Kook presumes I need simcha. If I'm in a state of chedva b'simcha, I'm standing in front of Hashem, I'm close to God, intimate, then I can have a positive impact on others and uplift them. If, on the other hand, I'm in a state of etzev, I cannot have a positive influence on others. The etzev experience is personal. It's meant for me to refine my soul, but bein adam li'atzmo, not with regard to others. Now, what does that have to do with tefillin? So let's take a look at Rav Kook. He says the fine pe'er. Pe'er means splendor. It means beauty. Tefillin is called pe'er. Tachlit ha-pe'er v'ahidur, where we beautify things and make them aesthetically attractive, he tamid, it's always lif'ol al zulato. It symbolizes having an impact on others. If I'm an artist and I create a piece of art, that art has tiferet, and it's meant to be shared with others. That you can be uplifted by it, by experiencing pe'er. And he says, when we take a mitzvah and we beautify the mitzvah, which is called hider mitzvah, that also means to take something from the level of seichel, which is private, beinonim liatzmo, you can't read my mind, that's me communicating with myself, and to take it lefoal, in such a way that others can see it, to regesh. Regesh is always the physical element of life.
Emotional.
Say it again?
Emotional.
I don't hear you, I'm sorry.
The emotional.
The emotional, correct. The emotional element or dimension of man, that belongs to the olam ha-maaseh. He says, Yesh bazeh gam ken inyan akiruv lepula al hazulat. Once I get to the level of Hidur Mitzvah, I can have an impact on others. Meaning, if I come into shul with a beautiful esrog, it's going to have a positive influence on others, and it excites everyone for that mitzvah of the Dalad Minin. HaTfilin. Now, where does Tfilin come into this whole thing? Heimu azeh ha-tachlit. Interesting. Tfilin is called Pe'er, because Tfilin are meant to have an impact on others. Now, Rabbo said we have two Tfilin. Which Tfilin is he referring to? Clearly, Tfilin Shel Rosh. Tfilin Shel Yad is private. It's none of your business. It's Beni Levein Atzmi. But Tfilin Shel Rosh is meant to have an impact on others. And that's Pe'er. Al Kein Omer Ablezer HaGadol. This is a Gemara, I think, in Menachos, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see, where is this? Oh, he says the name of the Gemara Brachos. V'ro kol ame arts ki shem Hashem nikra lecha. Elu Tfilin Shel Rosh. When a person wears Tfilin, that is meant to have an impact on all those around him who observe him wearing tefillin. Again, if you wear two pairs of tefillin on your head, like some of the Bali Kabbalah, that's a bit of a problem because of Maltosif. Because you want to have a double impact on others, but one at a time, otherwise we're adding too much, so maybe cover one of them. V'hine lif'ol ala zulat, if tefillin represent this idea of having an impact on others, tzarich shetia nefesh b'mamad oz v'chedva. It's if your spirit is low, that's not going to do it. If your spirit is on a powerful level of joy, us, then, b'chedvat Hashem, by feeling this closest to Hashem in joy, that it always says, v'savachta lifnei Hashem alokecha, asher olav yuchal lahamshich gam ken azulatu l'derech ora. Then he can share this light and his joy with others. I will be ancient of shomit mogeget when his nefesh is overwhelmed. It's almost in a state of distortion. It's not in a natural state. May otsev, because he's experiencing a depressing situation. In key, even though I agree, says Rav Kook, there's no doubt that a otsev teitzena, may a otsev teitzena toldo tovot lenafsho. On a personal level, ben adam liatzma, if you lock yourself up and you suffer with that etzev, and you use the etzev to cleanse yourself, to uplift yourself, bring yourself to tshuva, and to fine-tune your nefesh, aval nimna v'gamein enochon shishtadu l'koch otzev lifal al zulosa l'harchiv oso. Don't even make an attempt to take the power, the energy force of Etzev, and use it as an impact on others. It's going to only have a negative effect. This is what the Bali Musa talk about, that a person should always have a smile on their face. Because if you have a frown on your face, it's going to bring others down as well. Rav Kook gives you an absolute rule of thumb. You can never have a good impact on others through Etzev. Etzev is for you yourself. That's a very personal experience. Al Kanan, therefore, be eight gvar. I don't know why I use the word gvar. I would have called it hitgabrut. But when the Etzev becomes prominent and takes over your personality at the moment of Avelus, ain't to dat hatfilin shenikraim per holevitlo. It's not appropriate to try to achieve the goal of tefillin. The power of tefillin is the power to have an impact on others. When you're in a state of avelus, don't try to reach out to others. Ki raka hitkansut hakochot yafe'az. At that moment in life, take all these powers and withdraw. Take them into yourself and see how they can impact on your soul. Oz yavol matarato. Then the etzev will achieve its goal at eight yair Hashem lo viagia cheshko, until Hashem will relieve him, will uplift, you know, he'll bring the clouds and disperse the clouds and bring him the light of simcha, and then he'll be able to come to close to Hashem b'shuva b'tshuva shleima mi'ava, and then he can share that love and that light and that simcha and chedva, that joy, with others. Ki arzeru tzak yishleiv simcha. That's only after the period of avelus. So it means that Avelus and Tfilin as Pe'er are mutually exclusive. They're antithetical, because Pe'er means Simcha. Pe'er means I can impact on others from my Matzav Ruach, my state of Chedva, of being close to Hashem. Avelus is an experience in which man feels alienated from Hashem. He's in a state of Etzev, in which he has to, in a sense, introspect. a hitkatsut. I like that word, hitkatsut. He has to go pnima. That's what's good. He uses the etzev, but now's not the time for interaction with others to try to have an influence on others. Again, Rav Ose, as I've said a million times, and I beg forgiveness, I would have learned this Gemara for 1,000 years, and never would I have seen this in the Gemara. It's pretty amazing. Okay, let's go on now in the Gemara, and what surprises me is when Rav Kook takes what I would call a halachic Gemara, and sees in it a statement of philosophy and ethics. The Gemara says the following. This is on Daf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, about halfway through the page. You'll see the two dots, Tana Rabbanan. And Beis Hillel is of the opinion, against Beit Shammai, that even though the Torah says Bishalbacha, which means that I recline to go to sleep and retire at night, nevertheless, Omdim, I should recite Kriyat Shema in a standing position. Or, if I like, I can Yoshev. I can lean, I can sit, I can walk. Any position is appropriate. Bishalbacha, says Beis Hillel, is not indicative of the position, the posture for Kriyat Shema, but rather the time period. And the Gemara goes on to tell a story about Maisav Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Lozim and Azari Shayu Mesubim B'mokom Echad, V'hoi Rabbi Yishmael Muteh. It was at night, they were reading Kriyat Shema Shel B'shal Mecha, Shel Arvis, and Rabbi Yishmael was reclining. Okay, that's very natural, a person reclines at night. Rabbi Lezim and Azariah Zokov, he was in a standing position. What the moment of Kriyat Shema came, so what did Rabbi Lozim and Azariah do? He reclined. In other words, he actually followed the chumrah, the stringency of Beit Shammai. Zakah Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael went out of his way, even though halachically he wasn't required to stand, because they still say that you can recite Kriyat Shema in any position whatsoever. So he could have remained reclining. But the moment he saw that Rabbi Loza stood up, which means that Rabbi Loza was reflecting the sheet of Beit Shammai, hey, Rabbi Yishmael said, this is not good. We don't paskin like Beit Shammai. Absolutely not. Omalo Rebbe Loz ben Azari Rebbe Shmuel Yishmol Achi, my brother. Em shalachom moshal. Lema dover doma. Your actions are similar to a person that they tell him zkancha megudol. They say, you know what? You've grown a beautiful beard, right? Omalo Emser responds, yehei keneged amashchisen. Because you've complimented me, I'm going to take off my beard. I'm going to shave it. Afkach, ata kolz ata. You two the same. Kolz manchani zokuf ata muta. When I was standing, you were reclining. Ashashani hitesi. Now I went to recline. Ata zakafta. You stood up. Omalo. So for the record, Rav Shmuel told him, ani asisi kedire beis Hillel. I made sure that it was crystal clear that I was following Beis Hillel and not reclining for the sake of a Shalbuch of Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis. V'ata sisa kedir Beit Shammai, and you, Dafka, when you were standing in a straight posture, you recline like Beit Shammai. V'lo'od. And furthermore, Shema Yira Talmidim, maybe the Talmidim will see the way you act. The Yikvu Aloch L'doros, they will say, hey, look, Rabbi Lozman Azariah imitated Rabbi Yishmael and he reclined. It must be because we pass in like Beit Shammai, that Bishalbucha means literally that you have to recline. And that's a very dangerous situation, to mislead the Talmidim and have them think that we pass in like Beit Shammai. So this is a halachic Gemara which has implications in the poskim. You're allowed to stand for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis if you're in a sitting position, or you can remain sitting. But you're not allowed to, if you're standing, you're not allowed to sit down for Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis, because that would be a public demonstration that you paskin like Beit Shammai, and that you're not allowed to do. Rav Kook sees in this Gemara a philosophical concept, and we'll only have time to do the first one, because I want to talk to you about Tisha B'Av. Yesh Hevdel, he says in Kufnun Ches, Bein Hasagat Sechlit Mitzad Hasecha V'Koch HaChoshev Levein Hasagat HaRegesh HaTahor SheTzarich SheYalvel Lav Gam Kein Koch HaMedame Ki HaMedame B'Yoso Koch Gufni Ktzas Tzorech Le... Okay, you know what, I just realized this is a very long discussion about the relationship between the Koach HaRegesh and the Koach of dimyon, the power of emotion and the faculty of imagination. It's all based on the Rambam Shmona Prokem. So Bli Neder, we'll try to do that next time.
Are we, what's happening in Islam? Are we normal?
Oof. Let me just see if anyone's outside by any chance, and then... Hi, how are you?